Welcome to Tree Dog Tuesday, only on the Fueled by Joy Working Dog Podcast.
Fuel your dog with confidence. Fuel them with power. Fuel them with Joy High Performance 2618, made with the highest quality of ingredients, with beef being the first. Our key ingredients, omega-3 and 6 fatty acids, glucosamine and chondroitin, vitamin E and zinc, will have your dog's coat looking healthier than ever, healthier joints, and a stronger immune system. Not only will your dog have more confidence in the field with our high performance, but you can rest assured that you are feeding your dog a top quality food, knowing that all of our products are 100% American made and our brand has gone over 75 years without any recalls. Fuel your dog with confidence. Fuel them with Joy High Performance 2618. Call 800-245-4125 or visit our website joydogfood.com to find a dealer near you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Fueled by Joy podcast. And today we are lucky enough to be joined by my friend, Mr. Zach McBee. How are we doing, Zach?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Well, we come over. It's kind of short notice. I just told you not to bang on the table, and then I bang on the table. But it's kind of short notice. I called you yesterday. I said, hey, I had thought I had something in the file, and we had talked about maybe doing this at some point anyway, but luckily, I was home this week. You were around. You're getting ready to have some big doings tonight, I guess. So we might want to get this podcast done before the new baby comes. So congratulations on that, first of all. Hope everything goes well there.
Yep, appreciate it.
But one of the things I wanted to talk with you about, of course, we're going to get into all that stuff. Hunter's a big deal right now. Hunter's been a big deal for a long time. You and Doug have Wipeout Hunter together. But that wasn't your first major dog, that wasn't your first big winner. You know, that was a long time coming with Hunter. And I remember Hunter because Hunter and Con came up at the same time. And we got to hunt those two together quite a bit when they were younger. And we got to see Hunter go when he was a baby and all that stuff. So we're going to get into that. But I want to talk about first, how did you get, you've lived here pretty much all your life, right?
Yeah, grew up in Memphis.
Yeah, Memphis, Missouri. And you're in Coon country.
I'd say probably the best in the country.
I'd say me and you both hunted pretty much everywhere, and I'd agree. So what got you started doing this? How did you start? Who started you? What dogs did you start with? All that stuff.
Well, I started when I was little, probably 3, 4, or 5 in there. My dad went down and bought a dog called Newt that was off of Mr. Quick, and that'd probably been in the 89 or 90, just right when I was born, because coon hides were high, and so they hunted for money.
Yeah,
and
was that, had he hunted all his life too, or was
nope,
that, pretty, he that just, was just getting started?
Yeah, he didn't know anything about a coon dog.
Really?
Him and a buddy of his went down and bought one, brought it home, and didn't know a thing about training a dog, but they ended up training a dog, and the big thing was Newt treed 100 coons in one season, and Dad said if you can tree 100 coons in one season, you got a good dog. So that my dad started taking me, you know, when he was little, and then there was a guy by the name of Bill Waddell that lived in Memphis that took my older brother Jake coon hunting quite a bit, and they had a female named Jam and Judy that I think came from Steve Yant, which was out of Stylish Rank.
Mm-hmm.
And anyways, those guys took me quite a bit. And as time went on, I don't know, I was probably 7, 8, and I wanted to go to the competition hunts, and my Uncle Ethan hunted, Ethan Wright hunted with my dad, Jim, and they had dogs together. They had a double lipper bred female called Lou. She was a reproducer. They had a dog that they sold to Doran Cox, I believe got third in the PKC World Hunt. R.D. Trout was handling the dog. Anyhow, I started going to the competition hunts with my uncle, and he packed me around quite a bit. And it got to the point where, you know, I was 7, 8 years old out there, and we'd go to the UKC hunts, and I was telling the other guys what the rules were as we was going.
How'd they like that?
some of them appreciated it, some of them didn't, you know.
Yep.
But, you know, back then when I was going, it was we had Chris Montgomery hunting Sassy and RB Trout hunting, and Mike Fields was hunting Doolin Dan and his fancy female, and the Memphis Club would have 40 or 50 dogs. Gary Miller had a good plot dog. So it was a big deal going to those. Yeah. We went, you know, Troy a lot was a big club, had a lot of dogs. So anyways, Cuba, Missouri was supposed to have a competition youth hunt. I think it was a state, Missouri State youth hunt, and I was nine. And my uncle had a female named Meathead Judy. And anyways, we called her Jody, but on her papers it said Judy. Anyways, I was going to gear up and go down there, and they got canceled down there, and they moved it to Memphis. So I was telling Jerry Hawkins was donating lights, and at the time I had a little kitten cooner. He couldn't even hardly shine the top of them big pin oak trees. Mm-hmm. And I remember telling Chris Montgomery I was going to win that youth hunt because they was giving away a box light. So Ethan, he'd chuck me out on one side of the section, mile sections, and say, I'll pick you up on the other side, and I'd bring that dog down through there. And we go to the hunt, and ended up, it was July, it's hot, 100 degrees. And Jody sat in there treed for, I don't know, 20 minutes probably. Finally, I got her treed and walked in there, and she had a coon. The other dogs, I don't remember what the other dogs was doing. But they decided we was going to move spots. So Bub Walker from up at Troy was our judge, and we got in the truck, and he was riding with us. My uncle, he's kind of a gruff guy sometimes. He said, I'll tell you what, if you let that dog tree in this 100-degree weather without treeing her, I'm just going to withdraw you, and we're going to go home. He said, she does that double locate. You know to tree her on it. So the next three trees, that tree, you're on locate. You know, knowing what I know now, it's a good thing she's a good stay-put tree dog. But ended up winning the Missouri State Youth Hunt, and, you know, that was a big deal. I come home with a big Pepsi banner and two trophies and a light and a coat and all kinds of things. But, you know, that kind of kicked me off. But the one thing I, you know, right before that, I went to Black and Tan Sectionals at Kirksville. That was a huge hunt in the springtime. And John Monroe was there.
Oh, geez.
And I started, after that hunt, I started hunting with John quite a bit. And he would come over here and I would go over there. But, I mean, the first dog that I had that really kicked it off is, my mom didn't want us to have dogs. She, you know, guys would offer to give us pups and she'd get grouchy about it. You're not having a pup and blah, blah, blah. Because, you know, one time my dad had a lot of dogs. Anyways, I got my mom talked into letting me get this dog, and it was out of Chicks Wild Style, Troy Ferrari's dog. And Chris Montgomery bought the dog, and it was like 5.5 months old, and I saw it in his kennel, and he lived across town at that time. So I asked Chris if he'd sell it to me. He told me $250. So I mowed yards and took my money over there and rode my bike over and got this dog and rode my bike back home with the dog.
How did you pack your dog on the bike?
On a dog lead.
Did you?
Knowing what I know about dogs now, who would tie a six-month-old pup to a bike and ride it across town?
And make it,
yeah. But we kept it out at the farm, my grandma's farm, and, you know, that dog was a complete natural. Yeah. I showed it some cage coons. I was trapping coons in town and messing with it, and he started out a little trashy, but, I mean, to tell you the truth, I wish I had the dog today. What a track driver, and it was super accurate. But I put like back then in UKC, you had to have first place to be a night champion. Well, I put like 12 second place wins on this dog. And the Coon Club at Memphis was up at the fire station. And when we come to town, my grandma had cancer, and we lived out there at the farm with my grandma. Well, we'd come back to town because she passed away. And so I'd get my dog. My mom finally started letting us have dogs in town. And I'd get my dog and ride it up, my bike up to the fire station and see if I could get a ride with the cast. You know, and everybody was really good. And, you know, before that, I'd go up to the Coon Club all the time and see if somebody let me go along on cast. And all the guys were good, you know.
Was your dad still hunting at this time?
No, my dad helped start the club at Memphis, North Fabius Coon Hunters, which we still have today. And my dad wasn't a competition hunter. The one competition hunt that I can always remember Dad talking about, he went and his old dog was treed on two different trees, like 10, 15 yards apart, and he was going back and forth in between the trees, and he had coons in both of them. And Dad said, I just can't see that I can get minus when my dog treed a coon in each tree. And he said, it's just not for me. Now
that was it. Huh?
Yeah, he was done with the competition. So, you know, but he went down and helped at the club, and he always loved hounds. And my uncle, you know, he hunted, and my uncle was a superior dog trainer.
Yeah,
and knew a lot about dogs and taught me a lot about dogs. You know, and there was a lot of guys that taught me a lot. You know, I hunted with Ryan Houghton a lot. Ryan taught me quite a bit. John Monroe. You know, and you just learn as you go. But no, Dad, he wasn't into the competition hunting. But you know, my oldest brother Jake, he hunted in the Youth World of Joy. Yep. Big sponsors. We still got the Wick Joy coats from 1998.
Yep.
He still wears one, and he was really successful with that Jam and Judy female, and a couple other females Bill owned. And then Bill had cancer and died in his early 30s, and Jake kind of went to college and quit. My middle brother, he continued to hunt. They had a dog. My middle brother took me quite a bit. But, you know, then I was 7th, 8th grade, and my brothers were 16, 17, mm-hmm. and 20. They didn't want to pack a kid around with them.
No.
They did. My middle brother took me quite a bit during kill season, you know. And every year he'd tree 100, 120 coons. And he's a good dog man. He runs running dogs now and is a superior dog man. I don't know why he won't coon hunt. I've tried to get his boy into it, and we might get him broke down, get him back into coon hunting. His dog had heartworms, and they treated it, and we was out hunting with that little dog I bought for $250, and his heart exploded on a tree one night, and he took all of his coon hunting stuff and traded it for coyote dogs and has never coon hunted again.
Never looked back.
He's hunted. He goes with me one or two times a year, you know, but my oldest brother, he still hunts, and he's a good puppy trainer.
Yeah.
And he still hunts, mainly by himself, and he's got a good dog named Ranger.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've drawn Ranger a couple times, and dog's got a good mouth. He moves around pretty good, and he has his coons. There's nothing wrong with that dog.
He's a lipper bred dog. My brother's a big lipper man. He likes it.
How old is Ranger now? Ranger's he's got to be having some age on him.
He is, I believe, a year older than Hunter. I think he's 8.
Yeah, I thought they were. I couldn't remember if he was a year older or 2 years older.
Yep. He's a really nice layup dog. He's a great pleasure dog. If you pleasure on him, he'll treat every coon in the woods.
Yeah.
That's kind of how my competition career started off. I won that Missouri State youth hunt, and you know. And then,
Do you remember your first coon hunt ever, or were you too young?
I can remember one of the first. There's a section out northeast of Memphis that's a great big section, and they call it the racetrack.
Mm-hmm.
And I still hunt it today. Eldon Cork and I went down in there last winter. Doug was up, and it was right before that hunt in December La Plata had. And people are probably going to think I'm a liar or whatever, but you can ask Eldon Cork and Doug and his brother. We'd went the night before, and we'd treed 16 singles. And Eldon had mentioned it to Mike, and Mike said, there's just no way you can treat 16 singles. and he went with us that night, and we took – Bonnie and I had a pup out of Hunter that I still have. That's a fall 1 year old fraud. Kirk Swanson and I own her together, mm-hmm. and Doug's Molly female. And then Mike was trying a dog. We went down there and we never made it 0.6 of a mile from the truck, and we treated 22 singles. But anyways, that section's a real special section. It's great big. It's a walking type section. Yeah. You're not driving. You have to call a guy to get in there. You got to go through lock gates to get in there. But anyways. It was real cold. Dad and Ethan and I went out there, and my uncle had an old Bronco or an El Camino type, and the door wouldn't even – the door wouldn't stay shut. So, anyways, you'd lean against the door, and the door would fly open. And my uncle had a dog named Dan, and we treed 5 or 6 coons in there with Dan and Billy, and Billy was another good dog that was out of scrapper dog that either Montgomery or RD had. But anyways – we treated 5 or 6 coons in there, and my feet was cold, and they packed me and packed me and packed me. But I just remember how cold my feet was, and we got back, and I was pretty well addicted after that. I would say that was probably one of my first ones. I remember hunting with Bill Waddell. They'd have a weenie roast in the summertime out at his parents, and Rusty Anders and some Mark Holt used to be in the coon club, and they'd have a weenie roast out there, kind of coon club deal. And they'd take me, and, of course, I shined my lights in their eyes, and – you know, think I seen something when the lightning bugs light up.
Yeah, yeah.
Bill called me Ding Ding. He said I was just such a ding ding all the time. But you know, that was a pretty big builder, and of course, you know, when he was young, you'd go over to John Monroe's house and you'd see 35, 40 dogs tied up, and he'd mm-hmm. had the stories and the trophies, and he had I just went over there a couple months ago and asked him to look at them. But he's got books off of every stud dog he had that they're phenomenal. They've got every female he's ever bred to Chief and all of them, and the female's pedigree and who it was and the guy's phone number.
I think John Monroe and the timing of the stud dog world and the Finley River breed and all that stuff, that the stars aligned for that, because that was perfect for John's mentality. It was perfect. And John gets a lot of credit for being a good houndsman, but a lot of people don't understand how hard John hunted, especially back in the day.
Yes.
John hunted super hard. He was a lot like yourself, where it seemed like every time I talked to John, it was 3 a.m, or, you know, and he was just getting started. Sometimes he would start late and hunt till daylight. I mean, the guy hunted all the time.
Yep.
And he had a lot of good dogs.
Yeah, he did.
People get lost in some of John's ways. You know, he's a big talker. He's fun to visit with. I enjoy the heck out of visiting with John. But, you know, some of his, I think, credibility gets taken away because of the fact that he likes to talk so much. But John's a good dog man.
Yeah.
You know, when you drew John at a coon hunt, it would be at an RQE or something like that. I'd bump into him and be lucky enough to draw him every now and then. You had to beat him. He was packing a good dog.
Yep.
And that's not always the case in those hunts.
He'd go out to his kennel, and I'd ask him, we'd be going to a hunt, and he'd say, I don't know what I'm going to take. Well, which one? I'm just going to grab this one. And he'd grab one out of the kennel. What's its name? I'm not sure.
Oh, he knew.
Oh. And I guarantee you went over to his house, and he had a dog that he was hunting in the kennel. He wouldn't talk about that dog because he didn't want to sell it. And he knew if somebody offered him money, he'd sell it.
Yep.
So he wouldn't ever talk about that dog. I just remember going over there as a kid. I mean, it was like lighting a fire every time you went over there. And he got to where he'd come over, and heck, he had Thanksgiving with us. And John and I done a lot together. Later in life, when the first year my wife and I got married, we didn't have a place to live, and she got a job over the next county over, and we rebuilt one of John's houses and lived there for 5 or 6 years. So we hunted. That was the summer John had to have a quadruple bypass, and he kind of slowed down after that, but he still hunts. I mean, he's still going, he's still hunting.
I talked to him not long ago. He's still sharp.
Yeah, he's
mentally
sharp.
Mentally super sharp. And credit to John, because how many dogs do you think have passed through John Monroe's hands?
Thousands.
I mean, it's got to be up. My number I threw out the other day was probably 6,500 to 7,000 dogs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because, I mean, I don't know how many he's bought and sold that same night.
Yep.
You know, yep. I think Gomez, when he was selling Boss and them, he already had them dogs sold before he Jude Gomez down on them.
Yep.
Got them bought for a song and a dance and sold them, had them sold before he did it.
Oh, yeah. He's always got a place for one to go.
Yeah, he does.
Especially if it's a good one.
And those were good ones, too. That Boss and I can't remember the other one. Gomez had them all messed up.
Yep.
I love Gomez, but he had them all screwed up. Those were good dogs, too.
Gomez is – I like having Gomez for a judge, because there's no BS that takes part in Gomez's world. You know, when you're going out, you're gonna get just what everybody else is getting, you know?
If you want to know what Gomez's thinking, just ask him.
Yep.
He'll tell you.
Yep.
Word for word.
Yep.
You may not like it, but he's going to tell you.
That's absolutely right.
I cannot for the life of me think of the name of that other dog. Boss?
You know, I don't know. We'd have to call him and
Boss
ask him.
Wasn't the one. Boss, he said, was the best, but he had shocked him retarded. And he had him laying under the truck and stuff. And Frank was the other one. Boss and Frank. Frank was the one I hunted with the most, because by the time I started hunting with Gomez very much, Boss was already screwed up. But Frank was a good coon dog, too. Those were both good dogs.
Yep.
And I think John bought them for like $4,000 for the pair and sold them for $5,000 a piece or something like that.
It wouldn't surprise me.
And Gomez said, Gomez just giggled about it. He goes, well, he got me.
later on from when John was, I started hunting with John, he bought that dog off of Daniel Spurlock. I believe he bought it off of him. His name was Smackdown. He's at Tequila Sunrise. Mm-hmm. That was a real hound. And, he was one of those deep and lonely types, and he'd won quite a bit. I think Strickland might have owned Smackdown at one time, but I think he was a gold champion. He started taking him to all that. He wasn't ever been UKC.
Yeah.
Well, he was 8 or 9 or 10 or somewhere in there, and John started packing him around all of our UKC hunts. And they didn't like that, man. He was deep and lonely and winning with him. And I had a really good pup off of that dog. Started out a super good pup, and she had hip dysplasia, and we ended up having to put her down. Her hips popped out of place, yeah. And we couldn't get them back in, but that was a super good pup. But, you know, that was probably when I was 13, 14 when all this was going on. As high school rolled around, I hunted quite a bit with Ryan Houghton, and he had the Page female then. That was mm-hmm. a really, really good female. Come from your brother, actually, yep. Jeremy.
I remember starting her and getting her ready for super stakes and everything with Jeremy.
Yep, they bred her to Skipper, and I believe I got a dog out of that, which was named High Plains Drifter that Courtney Riss mm-hmm. just mentioned on a podcast. I got him. Danny Perez met us up around Louisiana, Missouri at a UKC hunt, and I got him. I think he was 8 or 9 months old. I believe he'd been at Pat Keller's training pen.
Yeah.
But anyways, bring him home first night on the way home from the hunt, cut him loose. He runs up the road and ambushes a coon in a cedar tree, and I went to hunting him, and he ended up finishing out to be a really impressive dog, big loud mouth, and he was either on or he was off. He was either going home with 1,000 points or he was done, you know, early. Mm-hmm.
That's a trait that line carried and still carries in the dogs that I hunt. It seems like everybody's yep. quitting early, or I am.
Yep. That dog was so loud when that was before we had Garmin's, which, I mean, it was a big deal for me to get a tracking system. My parents were kind of, you know, we'll buy you what you need, not what you want type parents. And just like I wanted a good coon light, and I won that one. Well, it was about wore out by the time I was getting close mm-hmm. to high school. And back then, I think I went out and I treed 100 with that little cloverbred dog off of Chicks Wildstyle. I treed 116 singles, shot them out, skinned every one of them, and took them to Fairmont, Missouri, and sold them for like a 532 average.
Yeah.
And I went and bought a Blazer 21-volt box light and a pair of Wick chaps on lacrosse boots. Mm-hmm. And
that was as good as it got back then.
Oh, it was awesome.
That was top-of-the-shelf stuff.
And they, my parents wanted to know what I wanted for Christmas, and I wanted a tracking system. So my dad bought me a 217 tracking system up mm-hmm. at Jerry Hawkins's, which Jerry's been good to me my whole life. I get a lot of stuff off of him. Yeah. He's gave me a lot of stuff, to be honest with you.
He gave me the shirt off his back one time. I was hunting up at Troy, Iowa at the pro hunt, and you know how the stick tights get up there.
Yep.
I had a shirt. I couldn't even wear it. I mean, it had shrunk on me so bad because the stick tights were sticking. And Jerry literally just took his shirt off, handed it to me, and let me wear it on the way home. Jerry's walking around shirtless at the clubhouse.
Yep. Yep. But the drifter dog, back to the tracking system yep. thing, you know, I had that beep. I had that beep beep, and you didn't need a Garmin with the dog. You no. could be walking in a cast, everybody talking, and he was so loud, he'd load up tree. I'd tree him walking. Mm-hmm. You know, 500-600 yards. And he was probably, I think I became a PKC member probably about in 2000 or something, which I was 12 or 13 at the time, whatever I was. And it was tough going in the PKC hunts around the house. There was a lot of good powerhouse dogs. I mean, Montgomery's female got third in the Nationals.
Yep.
And again, Trout's dogs were good. Bub Walker and Mike Fields again. You know, you had Kenny Schott hunting the 3/4-ton dog. You know, Troy Ferrari was hunting hard mm-hmm. then. There was a lot of good dogs everywhere you went. So there wasn't any youth events. You know, you didn't have youth cast. You just grew up hunting with the big boys. And that was a challenge sometimes. But and it made me a better handler.
I think it makes. And don't get me wrong, I love youth events, and I'm all for them, and we do our best to. But every now and then, it's good to go out there and just them kids to get their brains beat in by the grown-ups.
Yep.
You know, it's good for my son. It's good for everybody's kid. They got to learn how to lose, you
yep.
know. And one thing about me and you, when we came up, we learned how to lose because we did a lot of it when we
were little. Oh, yeah. whole lot more losing than winning, I can tell you that. You know, the only youth hunts I really ever got to hunt in was that Missouri State youth hunt. Mm-hmm. And I got to hunt at Walker Days. Chris Montgomery and John Monroe rode with us out there. And I hunted the Hardwood Wishbone female that threw Cornell, which Cornell was right here in the backyard yeah. at Talon Poe. And I had him there. And they had the Allison Chains dog that come out of the Sassy and Track Man. That was to the first of the dogs, I believe that Trackman bred probably, mm-hmm. and a lot of good ones. I had a female called Scrapper that Cheeseburger ended up hunting. I think she got ran over, John Horner under. I started getting them Trackman dogs, you know, in my teens. I was 16, 17, and John Horner come into the scene then, and he was buying them dogs, and Ronnie Smith was handling a bunch of them, and he was handling them, and I handled dogs for him, and hunted dogs quite a bit for John. And John packed me around a lot, and I didn't even hunt a dog out of his stuff. You know, I was hunting Drifter at that time, and John would pay my entry fees. Yeah. He'd pay my entry fees and my hotel and stuff, and I'd drive one of his trucks, and we'd have to take a dog trailer to haul the dogs wherever we was going. So I'd drive one truck, and he'd ride with his wife, and you know, we went all over, and you know, without you know, like Chris Montgomery and John, I wouldn't have ever got the exposure to go to the, you know, Walker Days, the Breeders Showcase, things like that. But I won a couple cast out the youth on the youth hunts at Walker Days with Chris's two dogs, and I ran the youth races with Wishbone, and she was a real dog. She was a real good coon dog.
What was Cornell like?
You know, I can just right here, 3 miles south of my house. Talon, Skyler, Wheeler, and I was hunting Allison Chains at that time, and Cornell was running around the farm. We come home, and right on the gravel road, there's a draw that runs east and west parallel with the gravel road, and he was treed there. That was his first coon he'd treed. When we was hunting him, he was a real tree dog, and he was a real layup dog, and he was a loner. You know, I think as time went on and they put him in the hunts, the more trees he made and the more radical he got. Mm-hmm. But he was a beautiful dog. And I ended up having a dog out of him called Bar None that was a gold champion. And I'll get into that here in a little bit. It's on down the timeline. But he was a nice dog. John, we was at a UKC hunt up at Iowa, West Point, I believe. And John Horner came up to me and he said, "Do you know where any Trackman dogs are for sale?" And I said, "Well, I know where a couple good ones are. Probably, you know, at that time there wasn't a lot of Trackman dogs." Mm-hmm. I said, "A couple of the nicest ones in the country, I'd say, but you can come look at them." So John come down. He said, "Let's bring some dogs with him." So I cut Drifter loose and Allison Chains and Cornell, and Drifter looked real solid. And he always did look solid in the summertime. When them kit and coons and stuff, he was a tree dog. And John said, "Hey, I'm not here to look at that dog. Put him up in the box." So we put him up, and he struck a deal with Talon and ended up buying half of Allison. He wanted to buy Cornell at the time, and Talon didn't want to sell Cornell. So he took Alice with him, and Ronnie Smith started handling her. He told Talon, he said, "You'll see that dog on the cover of the Pro Hound." And sure enough, she was on the cover.
Yeah.
She won quite a bit. Then later on in life, he ended up buying half of Cornell off of Talon. And I believe Talon and maybe Terry Walker and John owned Cornell, you know, till he died, which Cornell passed away after John passed away, which, you know, that was a real shame. That was a real hit to the mm-hmm. coon hunting community. You know, he helped start the Bear Creek, and he done a lot of stuff for the community around here, and he was good to us kids. You know, he packed half a dozen of us kids around to the hunts. But anyways, that was about the teen years, and I got into
when did you make the transition from, because, and you hunt both still, you hunt UKC, you got in tournament champions, all that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But when did you make the transition from UKC to mainly hunting in the PKC stuff for money?
You know, I think the big transition was probably when I ran around with Ryan and
because, I mean, at that time,
Ryan, you know, I hunted a lot with Jeremy, too, your brother. I hunted because I hunted Skipper dog. You know, I hunted with Jeremy. I'd go over to Jeremy's and hunt with him, have to go find him up the chicken yard or whatever. You never knew where Jeremy I have to call Angie at the house. Where's Jeremy at?
Half the time she don't know.
So I got some stories, but better not tell them on podcast.
Probably not.
Anyways, you know, I'd say I was probably around that sophomore high school, 15, 16, I started hunting PKC.
And that was when Ryan was hunting Paige.
Yeah.
Got her in the Final Four of the truck hunt, running around all them PKC hunts then, too.
Deuce and Dollar.
Yeah.
Jeremy was hunting them. And we hunted The thing was, I think the reason I hunted so much more PKC than UKC, because I just, wherever I could go, somebody give me a ride, or other guys were going, you know.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Bear Creek started up about that time. Well, that was a major event, and it still is around this area. You know, there's a lot of the younger hunters that you don't, and the guys around here that are, have really good dogs, they don't travel around that much, but they will be at the Bear Creek every year. Yep. And you see them get in the finals.
Yep.
Year in, year out, there's new faces in the finals there, and a lot of times it's the local guys right here that have dogs that compete, that can compete in any crowd. They just don't choose to travel, you know. And I full-heartedly believe that the dogs right here in our country are some of the best in the world.
Well, it's been that way, and you're carrying on that tradition, of course, with everything you guys are packing around, but it's been that way for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about John Monroe and all the other guys around here that always had coon dogs that were tough to beat, and I remember the Kirksville RQE when I was 13, 14, 15. That's the first time I drew Kurt Ehring when I was young, and that was hard. I mean, there were a lot of good dogs over here, and always has been, it seems like.
And that was the thing, too. Kurt Ehring is at all of our clubs, and he's always packing good dogs.
Yeah.
And
well, not
and
always.
He was tough to beat all the
he
time.
He was tough to beat.
He's tough to beat.
First time I hunted with him, he was hunting a black and tan named Ratchet that I wasn't a big fan of. And to be honest, I wasn't a big fan of Kurt after that cast was over. But we made up like we always do, and we still love each other.
We used to go down when Trackman was a young dog. You know, Chris and I started going down there and hunting with Kurt quite a bit. And Kurt's puppy, man. Kurt knows dogs.
Yeah, Kurt's a good dog, man.
You know, he's like an encyclopedia on bloodlines.
Yeah.
But anyways, I was going to go to University of Central Missouri, believe it or not, to be a game warden. And I got in down there, and I had a couple dogs, but I had a litter mate to the Yahtzee dog that was out of Troy Ferrari's dog, and Harry Togel bought it, and I believe Jess Dickerson ended up with that little female, and I think she got ran over, but I'm not sure. Her name was Twister, and she was a nice little dog. My parents said, you know, at that time, a lot of guys was wanting to buy Drifter, and, you know, $5,000 was a lot for a dog, and I wouldn't sell the dog. My parents thought I was crazy. She was being tough with me. She said, I'm not going to feed the dog when you're at college. You're going to have to figure something out. She was pushing me to sell it, you know. Well, I get down there the first week of school, maybe probably like the first day or two, and all I can think about is coon hunting. So I called Jeremy, and I said, Jeremy, do you know anybody down this area that would, you know, take me coon hunting or anything? And he said, yes, I do. I'll give the guy a call. So he gave Robert Williams a call. He lived in Odessa, just 30 miles down the road. And Robert told me I could bring my dog down, and he wanted to see it go. Well, knowing what I know about Robert, he probably wanted to see it go, because if it was a junker, he wasn't going to let it stay in his kennel.
Right.
So anyways, I started hunting with Robert, and Drifter stayed at his kennel for, I think, 2 years probably, and then I ended up selling Drifter to my rest of Drifter out to Ryan Houghton, and then Ryan sold it to the boys in Nebraska, Darius and Josh Cole, and then he went to the Weaver guy, and then Courtney Riss got him. But anyways, I think the big transition in my coon dog career was probably hunting with Robert Williams.
Is there not a... We're going to talk about starting pups later in this, and when we get into Hunter and we get into Drive and some of them other dogs that are a little more recent, but Robert might be one of the better pup starters and dog men that I've ever been around. Every time I ignore him, it seems like he's right.
Yep.
You know, it's just... And we've all got our instincts when it comes to certain dogs. And when I see a dog and I'm like, you know, I don't like this, I don't like that, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And sometimes me and Robert agree a lot. But every now and then he's like, you know, that's not the way you should do it. And he's been right on those about every time.
He had a dog named Boone that we hunted with. And that was the most consistent solid hound and could have won anything he wanted to put him in.
Mm-hmm.
But the deal is with Robert, we was at a UKC hunt, and I think Boone needed one or two more wins, and Robert had a pretty good size lead on him. He withdrew.
Mm-hmm.
He withdrew because he didn't want to hunt with their junk any longer.
Yeah.
And that's Robert in a nutshell right there.
That doesn't surprise me a bit.
I tell you what, one of the biggest pet peeves I have, and it come from learning from Robert. Drifter went in and struggled on track one night and come treed in there, half-heartedly treed and was treed. And we come up on this bluff, and it was a big white oak den tree. And it was probably August, September in there. The leaves were still on. I was back in college. Well, I went to blow my squaller, and Robert come up behind me, and he said, "Zach, I don't want to ever see you blow that squaller again. You know that dog doesn't have a coon, and all you're doing is rewarding him by blowing that squaller. Don't blow your squaller when you know the dog doesn't mm-hmm. have a coon." You know, and today, it drives me nuts at them hunts. You go to these hunts, and you can tell when a dog does a good job and when a dog has a coon. You know, if you're not one of those guys that stares and looks at your Garmin and actually listen to your dog and know what a dog sounds like and when it does a good job, man, sit like in them hunts. You know when you're beat at the end if somebody trees a coon to beat you and that dog does it right, you know there's going to be a coon there,
yeah.
Which a lot of the dogs that is going up and down the road in the hunts today have coons. But it drives me nuts for guys to sit around and blow a squaller on a slick tree and make excuses for dogs when they know it's slick.
Yeah.
Just go on and tell the truth yourself and roll on. But Robert taught me that, and still today, I do that a lot with the pups. You know when they're right and when they're wrong, and even if it is a big pin oak tree and it looks good, and there ought to be a coon there, but how many times you tell yourself, well, there should be a coon there, but most of the time there's not.
Yeah. You know? Especially when Con treed in either a mulberry or a pin oak, I hardly ever even shined it. I whipped him off a coon one time in a mulberry on purpose.
Yep.
He'd made like 7 or 8 mulberry slicks in a row, and he treed another mulberry tree, and he had a coon in it. Me and Zane were hunting. I went out there and switched him and sent him on. He goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "He don't know that coon's there."
It's kind of like dogs that get in the ground all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another thing, Robert. You know, you just it makes hunting a heck of a lot more pleasurable if your dogs aren't doing the dumb stuff that makes it miserable.
Yep.
And Robert shared a lot of knowledge with me, and I really enjoyed the guy. I still call him, still talk to him. But I think that was the big turning point in my coon hunting career, that made me a better houndsman is being with – hunting with Robert. I mean, the other guys taught me a lot too. I mean, there's no doubt about it, but I think I was at that age, I was ready to learn, I suppose, and not, you know, just, I think when you coon hunted when I was younger, you know, I coon hunted because I loved it, and I got really attached to the dogs, and they could do no wrong, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a trait that a lot of people carry on late in life too.
Yes.
That they never get over, and their dogs suffer for it.
Yes. I mean, I think the biggest thing to make you a good competitor in these hunts is knowing your dog's holes.
Yep.
Every dog's got a hole. And if you know them and you can keep them or avoid those holes from coming out in those hunts, you'll be more successful. But the thing is, you have to be truthful about yourself and know your dog's holes.
If you don't know what they are to start with, you can't fix them. You can't try to do a workaround to get around them or none
nope.
of that stuff.
Nope. You know, I can tell you every hole that every dog I have's got. I don't always want to share them, but
What'd you move on to after Drifter?
Let's see here. I hunted a dog out of Iron Man named Whitey of Chip Smith's. I took it down to Roberts and hunted it. And I hunted Boone a little bit at the Bear Creek a year, maybe 2 years for Robert. And then,
well, before we get into that, I got to tell Robert's story.
Okay.
We were at a pro classic over at Albany, and I had drawn Robert. This is just a couple years ago. Now, Robert, how old is Robert now?
He's got to be close to 80.
Yeah, I think he's 78, 79 years old, but still gets around. Like, man, he can. I pray that I get around that good when I'm that age.
Unreal how well he walks. Cleanest guy you'll ever see in your life.
Oh, yes. That's why I like riding with Robert. If I go to a hunt and I draw Robert, I'm always excited. That's the only person I'll be like, "Hey, Robert, can I ride with you?" Because some of these other filthy-ass coon hunters in these trucks, I ain't getting in them trucks. I ain't getting my dog in that truck either.
If Robert's got mud on his boots, he'll turn his dog loose again so he can get his boots mud washed off.
That's right. But we were hunting at that Pro Classic, and he was hunting Rebel. I'm pretty sure it was Rebel.
Yep.
And I was hunting Duds. Randy Reinhardt was in the cast. He was actually hunting Joe Black, and I can't remember.
Was this at Albany or Mercer? Was this when he fell down the creek?
This was it. No, it was at Eagleville. It was at Eagleville. Yep. And Rebel's in there banging around. He made some mistakes, and Robert's already mad at him, and he's banging around on this tree, and he's tree and leaving. Hunt's over. Duds his tree on past him. My coon ain't going to matter anyway. We've both done lost. I'm just going to walk in there. We're going to get Rebel. I'm going to get Duds. They're both on the way. We're going to walk up on the hill and get out on the blacktop from Jason, and then we're going to come around and pick us up. And Robert hit a limb going down this creek, and it's a straight bank, straight down 10 feet, 12 feet, and nothing but rocks on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I had got down in the creek and was coming around the corner. We're just trying to get our hands on Rebel, who's real loose. Robert's already mad at him. And Robert trips, and I mean head and shoulder first down on top of these rocks. It would have killed me. And I'm 40 years old at that time. I'm pretty young, and I would have died. And I see Robert's light fall off, and I see him hit the dirt, and I'm running around there to get him. Before I get there, he's already up, and he's cussing that dog. Because you know how Robert can cuss, too. He can cuss like a sailor when he's of a mind to. And he is cussing that dog up and down, and I mean, he don't care about the root or the fact that now he's all mud. He's mud on his face, and that's really making him mad. And he wouldn't let me help him. He got Rebel by himself. Got him walked up the hill. I offered him 100 times, let me lead that dog. He goes, this dog ain't fit for you to lead. That was a good coon dog, too.
You knew it was serious when he snapped him a stick off and was walking on the stick.
He was mad. And when Robert come out of it, he goes, my shoulder hurts.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, if Robert Williams says something hurts, it's broke. Like, it's a miracle there's anything even left of him.
That bothered him for a long time.
It did. It had to. You ought to have seen how hard he hit. I was worried.
I was over at that hunt, and he sat in there at the clubhouse after we was done. He still comes over. I've met him over at Jeremy's. I met him with you that night we hunted. He's came to the house, and
he's always a fun.
He always brings a gift for the kids.
Yeah. And wife always makes fantastic cookies to hunt, and stuff, brownies and everything. He's always got a great big jug of coffee.
You don't want Jeremy to be there. He eats all the brownies.
No, Robert got to where he finally brought a plate for me and let me keep it in my truck. Then him and Jeremy drive together, and I'd ride in a different truck with the brownies. So Jeremy wouldn't eat them all.
Robert was always a walk hunter, too. That's one thing I still do today. I don't drive a Ranger and don't drive to the dogs a whole lot. I just kind of get in and follow them, and
you learn more about a dog that way.
Absolutely.
And I do it more now than I used to, especially when I'm getting ready for a hunt. And Jed's gotten to where he's the same way. We still like to drive. You know, if you're wanting to just put miles on a dog, that's the best way to do it. If you're wanting to get multiple, but if you're wanting to really learn a dog and learn exactly what that dog's doing, you about got to walk behind them.
Absolutely. Yeah. So then probably been junior or senior year of college. So this has been 2 years after I started hunting with Robert. Every year, our spring break for college landed right on the Bear Creek week. Mm-hmm. So every year I had that whole week off and I could go up there and hunt. And John Horner called me and he said, "Hey, do you want to hunt a dog at the Bear Creek?" And I said, "Yeah, absolutely." He said, "I got one." Well, he had a dog named Hardwood Bar None, which was out of Cornell, and a female named Firecracker, which was off of Charlie Creek Terra. And anyways, I got Bar on the Friday, and the Bear Creek started on Monday and started hunting. And I think Ronnie Smith had won. Was it the Breeder Stakes they had? That one year he had to win $1,000 open money, and he got in the finals of that thing with the dog. And then Dennis Thornhill won all the open money on him. I can't remember how it all went. But Dennis Thornhill had won $1,000 worth of him in open money or better. Those guys had had him. And John had got him back off of, I believe, Terry Walker owned him, maybe. I'm not sure. But he owned half of him. John owned half of him. So I get the dog, and I went down there, and I won a cast or two with him. And on Sunday, I called John and said, "Do you want me to bring Bar back to you?" And he said, "No, if you like him, you just keep him." So back to Warrensburg, Bar goes with me.
Mm-hmm.
And at this time, I was out south of Warrensburg. There was a guy that lived out there that was a plumber, and I worked for him in college and deer hunted with him. And we done a lot of things together, and his parents and him owned quite a bit of ground. Brent Shanks is his name, out on BB Highway. Him and Jeff Jones lived, and they got to coon hunting with me. Well, I just took my dog out there, and we hunted Bar, and then I graduated college and come home, and I kept Bar, and I believe John ended up buying the other half off of that dog, and he just gave me half of him. So we had a kennel membership together, and you know, I'd ask John, do you want that dog back, or what do you want to do? And nope, you just keep him. So I just kept him. Well, then you know, I think it was a year after I got out of college, I'd say around September, October, I don't remember exactly what month it was, but you know, John passed away, and I kept the dog, and he needed he needed a little bit more money to be a gold or right in that area, and I drew out with the year before, I'd drawn out with Doug Douglas and Bobby Beggs, and I was just guiding that cast. And that next year, I drew out with Doug, and he was hunting Patches, and it was right after he'd won the Nationals with her. And we hunted with a boy from Iowa, and I don't remember the fourth dog. But anyways, Bar looked really, really good. He had like 775 or something along the lines. And there was just a couple minutes left in the hunt, and I had 550, and I believe Patches had the 500 or something, and we cut and Bar treated a coon 100 yards, 100 and 100, you know, and I treated him, and we kind of got in there, and there was a male dog coming there, and kind of had a little bit of a dog fight in there at that tree. And they, I mean, to be 100% honest with you, they could have scratched me.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened, but needless to say, we got in there, and a dog fight had been going on, and we hurried in there, and then the dogs had broke up, and they could have scratched me. And Doug was running for a truck ticket at that time with Patches, and had won a bunch of money that month, you know, so it meant a lot to him to have mm-hmm. that truck ticket, and he would have won the cast. And they didn't scratch me. That, you know, it's like they said, your dog treated all the coons tonight, and did the best job, and that's how Doug and I started hunting together.
Yeah.
I invited Doug up, and then and I had, at that time, I had Drive. She was a pup in the kennel, and I bought her. I was sitting here at this table eating one evening, and I told my wife, I said, well, it's coming on fall. I said, I'm going to get on the Pro Hound and buy the cheapest dog on the Pro Hound that's the closest to us.
That's the best way to buy a dog. It is. So, if you're getting ready to start a pup for season, that's the best way to do it.
So I got on there and saw this dog on there that I don't remember what she was, probably eight months old, 9 months old, somewhere in that area. And they said she'd go hunting, but she didn't know a whole lot. She would go hunting. I don't even remember how they listed her. But I called the guy, and it was Shawnee Knowles from over at Tennessee, Illinois, which now Shawnee comes and hunts with us, and I hunt with Shawnee.
Yeah.
We've been good friends since. But anyways, I called him. I think he wanted $900, and I told him I had $600, and that's all I had. And he said, well, if you could meet me tonight, you can have her. So I met him at Keokuk, Iowa, at Farm and Home, picked Drive up and brought her home. And, you know, I started hunting her. And she was the most – she taught me more about dogs than any dog I've ever had. She was the most irritating, temperamental dog you could ever lay a hand on.
Let's get into her pedigree before we start on Drive, because she was supposed to be out of Overdrive.
Yeah. So the spring before, I drew Beggs hunting,
yep,
Overdrive,
which that was a dog I always liked. I always loved, yep, Overdrive. We bred Bella to him.
We had in that cast, we had Jeremiah House, Abby female, and Drive, and the Tizzy female of Hathaway's. And I don't remember the other dog, but I was guiding that. This was the night after I'd got in with Bar,
mm-hmm,
with Doug. So I take him down to this spot, and I believe we treed 13 singles in a two-hour cast. And what impressed me the most about Drive is he was treed every 5 to 10 minutes at 400 or 500 yards, just all over,
mm-hmm,
which Abby was – treating a lot of coons too. I think both of them had eight or 900, yeah, plus. But we ended up catching a coon. It was a real tight cast. Abby got treed on a den. We squalled it out. She was leash locked. Drive was treed down on a little grass meadow. And we get down there, and Drive is treed up in a bank on a little bitty creek. Well, I was guiding, but Bobby said, can you reach down there and grab that dog? So I reached down there and grabbed that dog, and I grabbed him. And as I grabbed him, the coon come out, and he bit the coon, and we got the dog. Anyways, they plussed it up both ways. Had nothing to do with me. They plussed it up both ways, and Drive won the cast. Well, then they ended up taking the win away from Bobby and giving it,
mm-hmm,
because the dog wasn't fully handled. So I thought, I have to get me a dog out of that. And when I was sitting here, I got on the pro-am, we'd finished up with supper, and I had a Mr. Clean female that had really started out really good, and she was a nice female. A guy in Memphis, actually, a farmer that I coon hunted on, called me, and he said, hey, I bought you a dog. And I said, well, what'd you buy me a dog for? He said, well, they say it's all PKC registered. He didn't know anything about coon dogs. He said, it's papered up to the hill. I get it home. It's out of Mr. Clean. This is after he'd won the World Hunt. Well, I get that little female home, and we start out, and she starts out really, really good. And she was doing great. And she had a heat cycle, and that female went nuts, and I never could get her out of it. And I was sitting down there looking at the kennel out the window, and I told my wife, I'm going to buy the cheapest, closest dog I could find. So I got on there and seen that dog was out of overdrive. So I called Shawnee, and I bought the dog. Well, anyways, that was in October, I think. And I went to hunting that female, and she went to really cranking it out. And I looking back at it now is a stupid deal, but she'd get treed, and you'd go into them trees, and she'd shut up and stand there at the base of the tree and shoot a coon out. And this dog was a kill dog now. She was a kill dog deluxe. But later in life, I figured out she was gun shy.
Yeah.
And I'm talking, I shot hundreds of coons to this dog. And that's why every time you'd walk in there, she would get down off that tree and tuck her tail down. But she wanted that coon so bad she wouldn't leave that tree, but she quit barking. And ended up causing a lot of issues later on. But so I shot a whole bunch of coons out to her and hunted her, and I'm like, this female's a real deal. But she was quirky. If a truck pulled up along the road beside her, she'd shut it off. You know, if you got within there around 30, 40 yards of her, and shine your light on her, she's just done. She was done. She would never bark again. So I whip her out in the spring of the year, and we go down to Forestell, Missouri. They had that, I don't remember what they called it, Southern Missouri Classic, the week before the Bear Creek. And I was like, I'm going to get me a truck ticket.
It's like a Bear Creek warm-up type thing.
Yep. Go down there and start off with a bang, get her money, one for the Super Stakes, and we're gung-ho. Go to the Bear Creek, do really well there. Get ready to go to the Spring Super Stakes. Brandy calls me, and she said, hey, and I'd paid this dog up, you know, after she was 9 months old. So I, whatever it was, $400 and some dollars. She calls me, and she said, can you overnight another DNA swab of drive for us? And I said, yeah, I can do that. Why? She said, well, we got something's wrong with her DNA. Okay. And I've already made my reservation to go to the Super Stakes. So I send it in overnight, and she calls me back, and she said, Zach, we got a problem. I said, well, what's that? She said, that dog's not out of overdrive. I said, really? And she said, you know what else it's not out of? It's not out of the female either. And I said, so what do I have here? And she said, I'm not sure. And I knew the dog was a pup because she'd grown. Yeah, you know, she was a puppy. And so I called Shawnee. He's like, I don't know. I'd bought her off of David Deming and his dad, and they'd got her from Dr. Malkoff's place. And Malkoff's name was still on the papers, puppy papers. And anyways, Shawnee ended up calling. I don't know if he called Bobby Beggs or Malkoff or who he called, but they figured out what dogs was at that place, and they matched her DNA. And I think they had multiple litters. And anyways, old Gus must have been running around and ended up getting one of the females bred.
Stylish Gus, wasn't it?
Yep, old stylish Gus. And so she was.
So it wasn't like she was out of a yard dog.
No,
least.
She you was know,
Gus was a gold dog. Champion, I believe. So.
Yep. So she was out of a hard knocking stylish. I believe. So she was hard knocking stylish Hayes and hard knocking stylish Hayes Jr. on the bottom. So she was double Hayes bred.
Yeah. And her name was Mrs. Direct Drive. Mrs. And everybody Direct thought she was out of overdrive.
Yep. That's right. So, anyways, go to hunting her, and this whole problem with shutting up on trees just gets worse, and it gets to the point where she'd go and tree these coons, these casts, and the two'd catch me when we get close to her, and then dogs come in tree behind her, and they'd get 100 on it, and there she'd be standing there just wagging her tail, happy-go-lucky, and she was super, super accurate, and at this time, you know, I'd moved back into the area out of John's house, and I moved over to Downing. I wanted to put this in there that I went to go get a loan on this house, and I went to a bank there in Memphis, and they, I don't know, I was trying to buy 50 acres in a house, and they wanted to split the land from the house and have two two separate interest rates or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I went to another banker's, which it's Henry Blessing, and he hunts with me all the time. That's how we became good hunting and best friends. But anyways, I go to the bank, and knowing that I know Henry now, it's not very often that he's at the bank after closing hours. And I got his cell phone number from a guy in town, and I called him, and he said, "Yeah, I'm here." So I went in, and he unlocked the door and talked to him about getting a loan for a house and stuff, and ended up the house I was originally wanting to buy ended up selling or whatever, and I bought this house I'm in now. But Henry, you know, had coon dogs, and we started hunting together, and we hunted drive together with his rage female, mm-hmm. and he had another dog called Trapper that was a really nice dog. Looking back, we, you know, probably should have pushed him more than what he did. That was a good dog. But anyhow, you know, that was a big stepping stone with drive, because I got to hunt with Henry, and Henry always packed really good dogs. But she would she didn't hardly ever tree den trees. And when that female struck a track from point A to point B was impressive, and you could tree her on locate, and she was a real deal. So I had set in my mind, I've got to figure out a way to fix this dog. Well, it wasn't until Doug took her down and got ready for the super stakes that we figured out she was gun shy. Fireworks, thunder.
Yeah.
You know, if it thundered, she was done. She'd go crawl on a road tube somewhere or get in the truck. I was in a cast one night, tree a coon out of the truck. The other dogs end up treeing two or three coons. She's sitting in the truck in the dog box. It quits raining, quits thundering. She gets out of the dog box, trees three singles, and beats them.
Been there.
You know, she did that stuff all the time. You just never knew what she was gonna get.
Yeah,
but I mean, that dog taught me patience, because I sat there and worked and worked and worked, because I knew the ability she had. And anyways, my wife she's pregnant, and she's gonna have a baby, and Doug, we got a truck ticket on her, and then Doug's got her down at his house that summer, and he's hunting her, and he said, she's just not jumping in the truck right. Something's wrong with her. So he takes her, and she's got her licky, and her joints were swelled up.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the story gets even better. So this is like 3 weeks before the super stakes. This is her third super stakes, because it took 2 years to figure out the DNA thing. Yep.
And so then you didn't get to take her as a freshman and a sophomore.
Nope. And
or sophomore and a junior, I mean.
Didn't even know if I was going to get to take her senior year, but I said, hey, I want my – you know, I talked to PKC. I said, I want my money back if that's the case, because now – I paid the litter up for $250. You know, I paid the $400 and something, so they let me keep her as a super stakes dog, because we did know what she was out of, and we knew what litter she was out of and the birth dates and all that.
Right.
But it made her a spring. It went from being a spring dog to a fall dog once we figured everything out. But long story short, Doug doesn't hunt her for 2 or 3 weeks, and you can go out in the garage and look at the super stakes picture. She's fat as all get out, but she had her licky terrible, and he had her on the doxy pretty hard, and Doug goes in and gets beat the first two or three, I think, two nights, and the third night he drew out with Jess Dickerson, and they had a terrible cast, and I think she won the cast with an ungodly amount of minus.
Yeah.
And the dog wasn't a minus type dog, and goes in the late round and puts up a big score. So then the next night, the semifinals, I think Ward was on the cast. Drive looked really good. I think she had 450 or 475, and they withdrew. And then she went into the finals, and that was the finals. They never treed. She struck a red hot track right out of the truck and treed in a big oak, and they didn't find it. Circled up, and Doug won the super stakes with her, and that was in 2016, October 1st. Yep. And the night he won the super stakes, we had our first daughter, Peyton. So we had a baby in one day and won the super stakes, and that was something we always wanted to do, you know. I'd have loved to win the super stakes, but I was glad Doug won it, and glad that Doug did it for me. And Doug's been a great partner and a really good lifetime friend now. But anyways, getting back, you know, Henry and I hunted a bunch together, and that's, I think, the reason I can have the dogs I have and be competitive is because of the guys I have around here to hunt with. They all have solid dogs. We all have the same mentality on dogs. We all hunt the same. And if we have troubles with dogs, we can hunt them together, and it's like hunting in the world hunt every time, you know. But leading on to that, I come home in April, and my bar dog was gone out of the kennel. Somebody had stole him. They didn't take drive. They just stole him. So I was at a kind of a loss, you know, I needed another dog, and Doug had went and bred Patches to Zeb 3. And Doug said, I'm going to give you a pup. And long story short, I think, to tell you the truth, I actually had Hunter before Doug won the Super Stakes. Yeah. But long story short, it's just how it fell in. The dog got stolen, and Doug brings me a female out of Zeb 3 and Patches. And he had kept Hunter. And this was like October, November. They was 4 or 5 months old. So I raised this pup and got to hunt.
What was Hunter's birthday?
He is July of 2015.
I know, because him and Con were born like 2 weeks apart, I think. Con's was July 30th.
I think his is 16th.
Yeah, I thought they were like 2 weeks apart.
Yep, 16th of July, because it's my brother's birthday. He has the same birthday as my brother. So I got to hunting this female a little bit, and, you know, they was young, and we had the Missouri Pro Hunt up here, and Doug brought Hunter up, and Doug had hunted him and Mark Meek down at down by their house, Marble Hill. They'd hunted Hunter one time with Drive and Patches, and he flipped in the country. They're like 600 yards come treed, and they couldn't believe it. You know, he's just a puppy, and went in there, and he had a coon. Both those females come in and backed him. They just figured it'd be a possum or something there, you know, but ends up having a coon, and then Doug didn't really hunt him too much after that, and Doug doesn't really like puppies. So he brings him over to the house, and there's a guy that lives south of me that's I've hunted with a bunch, starting about this point, John Higgins. He always ran the Kirksville Club.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyways, Doug drops him off, and we catch a coon that night, and we go work him on a cage coon, and Hunter did really well on it, and the female did good. So John takes these pups home. He lives out in the middle of nowhere, and he takes and lets these pups run loose, and he calls me. It's probably 2 or 3 weeks, maybe a month. I don't know what it was. He said, and when Hunter showed up, Doug had him on a self-feeder. I mean, I thought he was the ugliest dog I've ever seen in my life. He looked like he had a little bitty teeny head, and he was fat.
Mm-hmm.
Doug takes very, very good care of dogs. When you get a pup from Doug, it's going to be roly-poly and fat, and he does a good job with puppies, keeping them healthy. Anyways, I go down. John says, I think these dogs are ready. You know, you might want to come get them, so... And John became very fond of these two dogs, you know, at his house. I mean, they laid on his porch and they ran everything in the country. And I go pick these two dogs up, and the female had a big old squall mouth, and she actually was running track better than Hunter, which I started him out. I thought, well, I'll find me a couple coons across the road in this area. Heck, I can drive around every night and see 20 coons across the road. So I cut them loose on this first coon, and they run this track down there, and the Hunter's way behind. He's, you know, this female blows it out of the water, and they put it underneath a pontoon boat on a guy's lake, and the female went to train some coons, and Doug always likes hunting a female, so Doug come and picked her up, and he ends up hunting her, and he said, man, she just blows tracks up. She gets in these cornfields, and she absolutely blows the track up and screws everything up.
Mm-hmm.
So he sold her to a guy, and she ended up finishing out being a nice dog, and we bred her to Juicy Wells. I got a pup down there in the kennel that's, cross my fingers, I think it's going to be the next one. But I went to hunting Hunter, and it was a long, stressful summer, and Henry and I hunted a bunch, and the corn was high, and that dog would get out in that corn, and he'd go track to track to track, and I finally, you know, at that time, I still had a 220. It didn't have any shocking. I was too tight to buy an alpha because that's kind of my MO. I'm as tight as a fat lady's socks. But I started going out in them cornfields, wading out in them couple hundred acre cornfields and kicking that dog out of them cornfields. And he just – the dog learns so well and so fast. You could train on him on one thing, and it's just he'd do it right. And he got to where he was picking and choosing them tracks, and – I hunted him that summer, and at one point I told Doug, I said, I'm about done with him, and Doug said, we'll sell him if you think you ought to sell him. And I said, yeah. And then I'd go out and he'd do something good. Mm-hmm. It was like he'd tree one or two coons every night of the summer, but that was it. He would never put it together, tree five or six, or you know, that was just kind of how he was a track dog, and he was super accurate. He didn't like to tree, like mulberry trees screwed him up. He wouldn't tree on them kitten coons. He'd trail off of them. Like I said, it was a lot of walking and a long summer. So we rolled into September, October, and things started to change with him. Season rolled around, and I started shooting coons out. When I started shooting coons, that dog, he really started putting it together. And we had a little club benefit down at Memphis. and Chris Montgomery's wife cooked a bunch of chili, and we went out with four or five dogs, and then we went back out for the late round, and Hunter was looking really phenomenal that night. And that was really the first night that I had shot a bunch of coons to him, yeah. You know. Well, anyway, and as it was the night before Thanksgiving, and he treed, eight or nine singles, and we decided we'd cut loose about 4:30 in the morning. We cut loose, and he strikes this track
down. Which you're notorious for. That one last drop, you eat us up with that stupid thing.
Yep. I just can't get enough of it. That's what my wife says. I always tell her, I'm going to go hunting tonight or I'll be back. Just be a short one. Yeah, I know what short is to you. It's always – that's the thing about me. My dogs, the late rounds and stuff doesn't affect them because I consistently hunt 5 to 7 hours every night I hunt. Yeah. That's just how I do it. I go out and I probably could burn some dogs out at times. I'm sure I have and we'll continue, but that's the way I like to hunt. I like to recut and recut and recut, and in my area, you can recut as much as your legs can walk to them.
Yeah.
And anyways, Hunter strikes his track down this ditch, and John Higgins and Chris Montgomery and I are there, and this dog runs this coon out of this ditch out into this frosty cornfield, and this coon's right ahead of him, and he crosses the road, and he runs it across this bottom, and he's close enough you can see him run this coon. And down to the river they go, and he's down there treed, and I get down there, and he's about 55 feet in the air, and he'd went up a leaning tree, and the coon had crossed over the next, and he went to jump over, and he's hanging from his flanks, and he's hanging up above this creek. And like I said, he was way up there. I got a picture of it, but I don't even know why I snapped a picture at that time. But he's hanging from his flanks, and I thought, this dog is dead. There's no – and I tried to climb the tree, and the tree was dead enough it was going to fall in. So the only other option was to get in the tree next to it, which was the big oak tree, and I couldn't climb it. So I called my cousin that's a lineman, and he got out of bed at 5:30 in the morning and come and climb that tree, and we roped Hunter up, lowered him down. He got about 10 feet off the ground, and the knot come undone, and he fell down into the sand, but he saved him. And from then on, I shot, 150-some coons or 60 coons to that dog that year, and I took him to his first hunt in February to win his 100 for the Super Stakes. And I believe I'd have to ask Doug or look back. I won, 35 or 38 casts in a row with him coming into the one-year-old Super Stakes. And you want to talk about burning a dog out, I did it.
That's what I was worried about with him. Because I remember the weekend before we left Super Stakes, he talked about me and you and Robert hunting that night.
Mm-hmm.
And Con and Hunter the same age. I was getting Con ready just like you were. I'd been hunting super hard, but I felt like I had him where I wanted him, and I didn't want to push him too hard on, what was it, Saturday? This was Saturday night, and the Super Stakes started on Monday.
Yep.
And so Robert come up. He brought one of his good females, or both of them. I can't remember now. Yep. But we treed quite a few coons, hunting till what, midnight, 1 o'clock?
Yep.
Well, I told you, I said, as soon as Con gets off by himself, has a coon, I'm knocking it out and putting him up. I'm not hunting him no more, you know. Oh, yeah, that's fine. I'll do the same thing. I think that's what I'm going to do, too. Well, Hunter made, one little stupid mistake at, 8:30. And you just kept turning him loose. Turning him loose. And I kept telling you, I was like, Zach, put that dog up.
That's the ground then
you
pound.
Then you turned him loose on the way home, didn't you?
Yep. I hunted him Sunday
night, hunted him Sunday night.
It snowed.
Yes. Yeah, the weather was terrible.
It snowed, and I hunted him Sunday night. Yep. Yeah. And to the Super Stakes and won every early cast.
Yep.
And I cost myself, there's learning mistake. Hunter trailed away from the dogs when he was going into score dogs, and he trailed the opposite direction. I treed one coon, he trailed the opposite direction, and at that time, I wouldn't even think about it. I got back to the truck, and Doug said, what are you doing handling that dog? He said, why didn't you tell him you wanted your option?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a textbook option rule. Could have.
That's a rule that gets underutilized all the time.
Could have called a timeout and went and got that dog. He was treed over there by a train track with a coon. But we walked away from him to score dogs, and he stayed where we were supposed to be hunting, and he trailed out of there. But the reason I got beat on the late round the last night, which George Majors loves the story, I treed a couple coons and was winning the cast against probate, and he ran this track in this little water area and treed this coon. There's wet coon tracks going up the tree. Old George squalls that coon out of the tree and squalls it down there. Well, Hunter seen it. He goes back to tree twice. I get scratched. Happened 2 years in a row at the Super Stakes.
And that is a dog. Because I got Con in that year, and Hunter was a better dog than Con. He's more talent, better track dog. Con just had a knack for staying completely out of trouble. He was going to tree you two coons and not draw any minus and not do anything flashy or crazy, you know, but he didn't make any mistakes at that time. And so I got him in, but I couldn't advance. And I'm thinking, as you were going home, I'm like, this is wrong that Hunter is not in this thing and I'm hunting on Friday night. I said, that's wrong.
He was about as solid as a one-year-old I think I've ever packed around. And Bonnie was, she's pretty solid, but Hunter was bad luck in the big events. I know Doug Lawson. He had the Walker breed race, or the Walker, whatever it is, the where you get in the top 16 of the breed race. He had it one, and Hunter went back to tree 35 minutes after he'd done treed it and already treed two other coons and got scratched.
He reminds me of Dud so much sometimes.
That dog never would hunt for Hunt. Butch, back then, I didn't want to hunt in the major events. I didn't care about going up and down the road, and so Doug kind of liked it, so he packed him around to the bigger stuff, and I hunted him at the Super Stakes, which I got him in, you know, his sophomore or junior year. But the dog hated Doug, and I don't know why. He does stupid stuff for Doug. I think Doug hunted him in a Pro Classic. He was maybe last summer, and he said he just out of nowhere comes walking into a tree.
I won that cast. I won that cast with Rain, and I seen Hunter coming.
The dog never does stuff like that for me. I mean, he won't. But if he can do it to Doug, he'll do it to Doug.
Yeah, he done some stupid because he backed out of the truck, which he never does. Yeah. And then he gets struck again and comes walking in and just stands by it.
Yep.
And I said, Doug, what did you do to that dog? He goes, that dog hates my guts.
Doug says, then, I'm done hunting.
By the time Hunter went over there, he did tree a couple of coons, I think. But by that time, it was too late. You know.
He just, you know, Doug's like, I'm done. I'm not going to hunt.
Well, some dogs are one person. The wipeout dogs are notoriously one person dogs.
Yep.
It goes all the way back to Ruby whenever Strickland bought her, couldn't win a cast with her.
Yep.
It goes back to I've got one that's the same freaking way, you know, and they are notoriously kind of one person dogs. Now, don't get me wrong, Doug's won with Hunter too.
Mm-hmm.
He's won cast with Hunter. He's won plenty of cast with Hunter, but he's not the same as he is with you.
Yep.
You know, he always makes some stupid mistake that he doesn't seem to make whenever you got him.
Absolutely. It's like Hunter's hunted with Henry enough that I think he would, you know, Henry can handle him. But Hunter was he's a tough dog to call. I mean, and I'll be 100% honest with everybody. What Hunter lacks is being the one bark tree dog.
Yeah,
you know, if you're going to handle him, you better hunt him.
Yeah,
he's what Kitty said about Zeb is a spitting image of Hunter. If you could pack a rifle to the competition hunts, I would never get beat.
Yeah.
Because if I shoot that first coon out to him, it is game over.
Yeah.
And he is there's many, many nights that people come over to go hunting, I'm shooting coons out, and they're in awe. You know, that dog will tree coon after coon after coon, every style of coon. Old tracks, bad tracks.
Shocks the same way.
And it's just, that's just the way he was. But, you know, you go put the dog and win 180 cast with a dog that's a $30 and $50 hunt. So I don't know what it was, like $17,500 in the open events. But you do that to a dog before they're 2 years old or 3 years old, whatever it was. We ran for the pup of the year is the reason I got to win all them casts. And I thought, well, I might as well just try to win the pup of the year with him. Well, you know, I missed the Labor Day Classic and ended up getting, I think, third in that with him that year. And got beat out, but I needed to be at the Labor Day Classic and things. And at that time, I built houses, and I was gone and real busy all the time, so I didn't get to. And when I was running that race, going back to John, I was so tired that John Higgins drove me everywhere.
Yeah, I remember.
I had an old 98 Chevy that was junk. I mean, we blew the brake lines out, hitting the brakes so hard, not rear-end Kurt Aaron one night down at Meadville.
You should have just kept going.
We was going down 36, and Kurt was in front of us, and Sean was in front of him, and they all hit the brakes, turn into the media, and John locks the brakes up, and we blow the brake lines out. I mean, that truck was – we was hauling a nice dog and a junk truck.
But yeah.
That's kind of my MO. That's what I like to do. But, you know, John, he went up and down the road ever with me. I slept, and I think we won 5,000 or 6,000.
You guys done a good job trading off, because John would sleep about the time the cast got started. Yep. You'd get him a good 2-hour nap in, and then you'd sleep whenever you got back in the truck.
I took Hunter to his first hunt, and John was there. He was probably 10, 11 months old. He wasn't ready to be in a hunt, but I wanted to take him. We drew out Rick South and a couple other guys and got back to the truck, and John was at the truck talking to them guys, and John told them guys, he said, that's the nicest young dog in the country. He said, I just want you to know that. And I looked at John and I thought, keep your mouth shut. He looked like a pile, and don't be telling people that. And John still tells me today, he said, I was telling the truth, wasn't I?
Yeah, there you go.
And he was a good dog. Yeah. I mean, he still is a good dog. But if I could shoot coons to the dog in a hunt, he's a totally different animal when you shoot coons to him.
I also want to get it out there that you guys have the best coon hunting in the world. Mm-hmm. Coons everywhere, a bunch of coons, but all your dogs have won from Texas to Kentucky to Indiana, yep. Illinois, here, there, yonder. They travel well, as far as just because coon dogs are going to be coon dogs no matter where you turn them loose.
Yep.
The fact that, oh, I could treat coons out here, I'll tell you what, come to Memphis, and if you treat more coons than Bonnie or Hunter or something like that, then you really got something. But those dogs will beat your brakes out in thin coons too. Yeah. Doug don't have coons like we got.
No, Doug don't have
And
coons.
Doug takes these dogs down there and hunts them too, and you know, and it's rough down there.
And that's what works out on the partnership. Yes. I can start these pups up here in this good hunting and hunt them and get them really rolling and then send them down to Doug, mm-hmm. and he can hunt them in the hills and the hollers and the big timbers. The thing is about here, you know, we have bigger timbers. We can have 300-400 acre timbers and hunt them. There's always edges.
Yeah, always an edge. And even inside dogs, the timber, there's usually a logging road, or there's a creek that's real clean or something that they can run.
You take them dogs from up here to take them to somewhere that all you're hunting is a big timber.
Yeah.
They got to learn how to hunt it.
Yeah.
And it's an advantage to have Doug take the dogs down there and hunt them in that country, cutovers and rocks, and mm-hmm. it's drier down there and they don't have the crop fields. It's a huge advantage. You know, that's not the only reason I'm partners with Doug, but it does work.
It does help.
You know, Doug and I have been partners, I don't know, for a long time, and we've never had an argument, never had a disagreement over money, nothing. I mean,
I can't say that about my partner. We fight all the time. But it's a good fight. We're always fighting the good fight, but we're always arguing.
When Doug figured out.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is going to be it for part one of three with Zach McBee. And I'd just like to say, I mean, I don't know if the world agrees or not, but this was the epitome of what I think a hound hunting podcast should be. This was literally as much as I could make it so, and Zach done a fantastic job. Just two guys that love dogs that were just sitting down and talking about dogs. And I think we got nearly 4 hours worth with Zach, and we could have done it for another two or three. Here's a guy that loves coon hunting so much, and, you know, he shares the passion that a lot of us do. And I had a ball. I had a great time. I was excited the whole time we were doing it. As everybody knows, I love to just sit down and talk dogs with good houndsmen, and Zach's a good houndsman. Zach's had some awesome dogs, and we got two more parts of this series coming up. So I think this was, you know, this may have been the most organic podcast I've done, as far as it's just, you know, this is the way podcast started, and this is the way that I always envisioned them, and it was just a complete blast. So Zach's got some other stuff coming up in parts two and three that are amazing that you guys are going to like. I enjoyed it. Enjoyed sitting down with Zach. I'm going to enjoy editing out and doing these next two with him after this one. So continue to listen in. We have two more with Zach McBee. And remember to please give us a review on iTunes. Make sure and spread the word about the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating wherever you guys listen to your podcasts, and keep listening. And like I said, thanks to Zach. Thanks to all the listeners, and we'll see you next week. She'll never die of starvation.
she'll never eat. Maggie the moth, full of bravery and guts, and always at my feet. Her ribs are showing, her howl is long, but she refuses to die. Maggie will live 100 years longer than I. Maggie the mutt's always down in a rut, looking for some bone that she bears.